Don't put it in my pocket.
And just put it in your pocket.
It.
Yeah.
Play with it first and see.
There you go.
Testing. This is a test.
Yeah, test.
Can you see me? And you're walking like this and doing this. Doing this. Look at Cameron.
In the end, you can do some dance, you know. There you go.
Do the Miranda dance.
Okay.
So when you're...
Three action.
I'm not ready. Okay, one, try again. One, two, three, action, try it again.
One.
So am I starting over? My name's Brent Grafton?
Yes.
Okay.
Own a Green True Plastic.
Right.
Yes.
Ready?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to do it because it's already that part.
Okay.
I don't know if you just want to start.
Yeah, keep it with this different version.
Okay, okay.
Huh?
Yeah, cool.
Oh, you want me to go ahead with Green Tree?
Yes, your name and Green Tree Plastic.
Okay. My name is my name is Green Tree.
Okay,
ready?
One, two, three, action.
Hello, my name's Brent Grafton. I am the founder and owner of Green Tree Plastics. We are a plastic lumber production company that has been making park benches and picnic tables for schools for the last 8-10 years. In response to seeing all of the events that have been happening in our schools with people using guns to harm other students, we have been putting a lot of thought into trying to come up with a product that could possibly help our school children protect themselves. I contacted a manufacturer who makes panels for the U.S. military that they use in military environments to stop shrapnel and stop bullets. The manufacturer, Poly One, I don't know what the name of the, okay, you get that from the other one,
yeah.
Okay. So they sent to us 3 half-inch panels and 2 3/8-inch panels. We took those panels and we built them into this bookcase. You can see this outline here. This outline is the top. This is the 3 half-inch panels, which we anticipated being able to stop some very powerful weapons. We have 2 3/8-inch panels in the base of the bookcase, which is not as much protection, but we put them into the bookcase to see what kind of bullets that they would stop. So the first one that we shot was a 308, which is a 7.62-5.1. People who know weapons understand that. I'm not sure I understand it. But we took, and from 50 feet, the shooter shot 5 shots into this target. What we intended to do was to try and not precisely match the ASTM testing when these panels are tested for production, but we tried to be close. And so under those terms, we're supposed to have a 12 by 12 target. We put 5 rounds 2 inches apart. And if it will stop those 5 rounds 2 inches apart, in this case, it would be considered a level 8 protection. So we have this 12 by 12, we have 5 rounds. These two are not quite 2 inches apart. And as you'll see on the back side, the plastic actually has moved from one of these bullet shots, but it didn't actually penetrate. Then the next weapon that we brought out was an AK weapon, AKS. It's also a 7.62x39. And this one we fired at 50 feet, 11 shots. And again, even with this tight pattern, there is no penetration and no protrusion on the backside of the plastic lumber. The third weapon that we tried was for number 3. This is actually a 357 long rifle. Again, we have 5 shots, 2 inches apart. And when you see, and you can see on the backside of this panel that there is no evidence that anything has protruded or anything actually pushed through. Number 6 was the weapon that probably the most commonly heard weapon in school shootings. This was an AR-15. The young man who was shooting actually used a penetrator bullet, which is not quite a bullet that's a armor piercing, but it's a little harder tip than what's normally. And as you can see, there were 5 shots taken, and these were actually put very close in together. And on this backside, you can see that there's no penetration. The probably the most powerful weapon that we used in this experiment, and the least likely weapon to be used in a school shooting, was a military M1, which in civilian life is known as a .30-06. This shooter put 7 bullets into this target. These 3 are within 2 inches, and you can see on the back where we think maybe one of these actually went all the way, penetrated all the way through, but these guys did not. And then the last test that we did on the top panel, which are the 3 half-inch panels, was a 500 Magnum handgun, which is a 50 caliber handgun. It's a weapon I've never seen before. It's a very, very large weapon. And the shooter put 5 bullets. As you can see here, he's got 2 of them right in on top of each other. And as you can see from the picture of the back, there was no penetration and there was no evidence that we had been shooting. So all in all, we have about 38, 37 shots fired at the panel. As far as we can tell, one of them penetrated, but it was also very shot from the M1. These other weapons that were fired are more likely to be found in the school shooter situation. We also then, the M1 fired here just to, as a control. This bullet went straight through. We could see it in the back. And this was a shot from the AR-15, also went straight through in the back. To test the 2 3/8 inch panels in these 2 targets, number 8 was shot with a 357 Magnum pistol from 17 feet. And there were 11 shots fired. And as again, you can see from the panel in the back, none of those shots penetrated. Number 7, the young man who was shooting just wanted to see what it would take to actually penetrate the panel. And you can't see, but in this pattern right here, there's 33 shots. And then on the back side, there's actually, you can see where the bullets came through. But as near as we can tell, almost nearly every one of those bullets tumbled. So it did not come straight through and come out the back. It actually tumbled around. So, in conclusion, the experiment that we were trying to implement with this project was to show that our material sandwiching these panels from Poly 1 would actually provide a secure barrier within the classroom for our children, something passive, not active, that they can hide behind if there's ever an active shooting situation in their school. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna do it just more close when you.
Okay. Is that when?
Okay, ready. 1, 2.
So in conclusion, this experiment, we tried to recruit help from professionals. Several of the people who were involved in the shooting were professionals. We had a range safety officer with us. The guidelines that we followed were the professional guidelines for ASTM as far as distance, as far as how the targets should be arranged and the distance from which we should be shooting. Again, the ASTM said the rifle should have been shot at 50 feet and the handgun shot at 17, which we did follow. And in conclusion, we think that the experiment of trying to determine whether our material would work in that environment was very successful. We had a lot of very good help. We appreciate all that help. If any of you have any suggestions or any ideas on how we might proceed with this project, we'd like to hear from you. The bookcase itself will be on rollers so that it can be easily moved into place, but the rollers will roll very easily one way. They can be moved sideways, but it takes a lot of effort, and firemen and policemen would know how to do that. Okay.
Okay, can you do it again and be in the center, and then when you're gonna done,
okay,
before you're gonna done, try to walk over the camera, through the
competition. Yeah,
over the camera, just like it's the competition. It's like that. Well, thank you very much. Something like that.
And like I'm walking away and leave you, and so I walk off the camera, and you just need me to do that, or you want me to repeat all that?
Repeat it one more time.
I can't repeat it all, but I'll do it. I'll do it different. I've been practicing now.
In the middle is better than just on the side.
Okay. Say when.
Second try. One, two, three. Action.
We thank you for watching this video. We have tried very hard to solicit professional level help. The men who are involved in shooting this were semi-professional shooters. One of the men that was out there was actually a safety range officer. So we've tried to duplicate as best that we could the kind of tests that would be performed for ASTM. That's why the rifle shots were at 50 feet. The handgun shots were at 17 feet. We know that in a shooting environment that the shooter more likely is going to be shooting at point blank. The ASTM tests are designed to have the bullets strike the target at right as they're beginning to lose their strength. So that's at full strength. We believe that this experiment was very successful, and we also, I don't know what to say from there. Okay. I should say we thank you for watching this video as I'm walking away, yeah? Yeah, we just want to say thank you for watching this video. If you do have any suggestions, you can contact us through our website. We appreciate our opportunity to make a suggestion on how we might keep our kids safer in their classrooms. Thank you.
Okay.
The bookcase itself will be on rollers, so that it can be easily moved into place, but the rollers will roll very easily one way. They can be moved sideways, but it takes a lot of effort, and firemen and policemen would know how to do that. Yeah, we just want to say thank you for watching this video. If you do have any suggestions, you can contact us through our website. We appreciate our opportunity to make a suggestion on how we might keep our kids safer in their classrooms. Thank you.
Plus, the bookcase will be full of books.
Mm-hmm.
So if one of them does sneak through a little bit, the book will probably stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the bookshelves and the shell of the bookcase is made up of the plastic materials that you guys produce.
Yes, sir.
But there's panels in between
The
front layer and the back layer that actually are doing the stopping of the bullets themselves. Because the bullet is going into your plastic, you can see that visible by the hole.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point in time when it reaches that other material is when it doesn't go any further.
That's correct.
Have you guys taken that bookcase apart and inspected those rounds that were still present in the case itself?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. It's still just like the same, but that is a good idea because just the half of the panel or the bookshelf has those ballistic panels.
Gotcha.
The other half in the bottom doesn't.
Okay, so you're just plastic, shooting into your plastic itself?
Yes.
On the bottom?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
The high-powered rifles hit the second layer, pistols and all the other stuff didn't have that. They just hit the plastic.
Mm-hmm. How heavy is the bookshelf?
We are thinking it's like 1,300 pounds.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're going to have to put it on rollers to make it easy to...
Yes.
Well, plus the books, it'll be pretty heavy.
Right. Yeah.
But you got to make sure, like, one teacher can move it by themselves.
Yes, yes. That is the idea. Even a kid, I mean, just roll it to the door. Because once you are outside, you know, these kind of events are a quick event. The guy is not thinking, just go inside. So if he want to try to push it, he can because it has a kind of longer bottom, the bookshelf, so he never going to move it. Has to go to the side, slide it. So,
have you guys considered on the bookshelf having the ability to have some fold-in inserts that could come out to expand the size of the bookshelf itself? Let's say they wanted to clean the books off of it and there's an insert that would fold out.
Like doors. You'd put doors on the front.
Some wings that would give additional protection. So let's say, for example, I have all my kids hunkered down in this corner.
Mm-hmm.
The door's locked.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that. And I could roll the bookshelf in front of them and open the wings up. And it becomes a shield for everybody to hide behind.
That's a good idea. We don't talk about it yet.
You could almost double the size of the bookcase.
Yes, yes. But yes.
Whether they go on the back side and come out this way or they go on the inside, but you'd have to clear the books out to get the wings to fold.
Yes. And odds are most of the people are going to be using an AR.
Uh-huh.
So how did the AR do just on your plastic? Because I wasn't paying attention.
That's what we need to check. Once if we open it, we want to see how was the reaction inside before the panel.
Oh, I got you. You don't really know if it went through.
Yes.
Okay.
Now we have to open and see how it's in the middle.
That would be a very good addition, like a part two to this.
Yes.
Showing, okay, here's the first layer of plastic, here's the bullet, here's the middle resistant.
Yes.
And here's the back side. No damage at all in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Middle's got a little dent or maybe no dent, and the front plastic stopped it, you know.
Because
you'll be able to tell some other guns you should have maybe tested. And maybe you can do that on a part two of a bookcase with no, just your plastic. Panels,
yeah.
Use like a .40 caliber, a .38, .380, the smaller guns.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because it's the Glocks, it's the, you know, the 19s, the 9mm, the 21s. It's
because
the ones
kids,
that,
most of the people are going to come into schools are going to be stealing their guns from their family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are going to be having small pistols.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially if the Glocks and the...
Smith and Wessons,
the 380s,
1911s,
yeah. They're going to get some light that they carry in with, that they got ammo for.
Mm-hmm.
The 308 and the SK and the SK, there's a 74 and a 47. I don't know which one's which anymore. But those are not really common.
Okay.
Most of them is going to be the AR and the small pistols.
Okay.
But...
not even the 500 Magnum whistle there.
Yeah, you're not going to have a kid. No. The first shot, that gun, he'll have it wearing in his forehead.
Yeah.
Have you shot just the inner material by itself just to see how it reacts with it without it being insulated with your plastic?
No, we don't. We just put a bookshelf like this, and it will be good also just show our plastic, our material, and see the
Is
reaction.
Is this the same material you guys use for your park benches and picnic tables?
Yes, sir.
Like
yes, sir.
It is I'm familiar with that.
Yeah.
They have some heavy-duty stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We do a lot of park benches and picnic tables, I mean, all around a few states.
Gotcha.
So it's pretty heavy. You know, all is recycled plastic. So, but because we're working with the schools, this idea came to Brent, and now we are thinking, and we're in the process of develop this bookshelf. But before we go with the superintendent on the schools, we wanna hear from you guys, your experience or what you think about it before we go out. So if anything we can fix or make some adjustment, it will be great to know before we go out. So once we start doing kind of sales for them or present it to them, we have all the information that we can use and, you know, talk with them and have the best product.
I'm just sitting here thinking, this is a great idea, but they already buy desk.
Mm-hmm.
They already buy other pieces of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the stuff nowadays is on a computer. They probably really don't have the bookcases like they used to have. Like when I went, that's all they had was bookcases. So I'm thinking, here's your...
Oh.
Hey, we just watched the video. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're famous. Can I have your autograph? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're just sitting here chit-chatting. We think it's a great idea. We're just kind of looking at some other, it's a great idea. We're just talking about some other things. Okay. I'll let you get the phone, man. Take care. See you. Bye-bye. He says, oh, he's there.
Yeah. I sent in a text before.
Okay. Well.
And what you was talking about, I know it is something out there.
Yeah.
But we were did our research too, and we are like a 50% cheaper than the products that is outside.
Because so, when you see pictures now, back, for example, Columbine was one of the first big shootings.
Mm-hmm.
The kids are all hiding under their desk, and they were pretty cheap desk.
Okay.
Didn't really provide them much protection. They were all in the library, so obviously there were bookcases and stuff in there too. But it's almost to the point where you got a good concept. You might be able to do bookcases and desk.
Uh-huh.
Most of the teachers are going to have people hiding under desk now because they've got desk.
Okay.
I just can't imagine what the desk would weigh, though. How difficult that would be to to move around in a classroom. I can just tell you the elementary school that they're opening, the new McCutcheon.
Everything's
school,
very light, isn't it?
Everything is very light, because that's K through 6. So those kids, have to, the little chairs they sit in, the little desks they sit in, everything in that building that I saw in the two walkthroughs I did are very disposable. So I'm not saying that. And I was thinking necessarily not doors, but could they make a panel? It depends on how your panels react without your plastic being involved. It might be a retrofit project where you could go in and you could actually put, if you can make it different colors, which it looks like, and maybe a design or something on it, you could basically retrofit a panel on the inside or the outside of a door.
Like an interior door.
Yeah, like an interior door for the classroom that's going to be locked. So if that individual decides to try to shoot through the door because they can't get in because it's locked, the glass and the construction of the door are going to be the two weakest points of that. They're not going to spend a lot of time dicking with the lock or trying to break through the lock. They're going to do the biggest amount of damage in the shortest period of time and then move on, because if they can't get into a classroom or penetrate the window and door to take a choose a target, they're going to write that off and move on to something that's going to be unlocked and open that they get access to. So if they fire at that window, which if it could be, I know they're working on the school guard glass concept, and I'll often show you that video where they've done a similar situation where they've layered glass together.
Ballistic glass.
It's not really a ballistic glass, but it they've stumbled onto something similar to what you did.
It's weather breakage.
So, but then to reinforce that door with just a simple panel that can be put on the inside, so that if I'm the shooter, the door looks normal to me as I'm approaching it, and I'm thinking that I'm going to be able to breach or penetrate that with my gun, I'm going to shoot it, and that panel's going to stop those rounds from ever getting inside that classroom to begin with.
Okay. The desk. We have to check also about the desk. We thought about it, but probably we can develop something, some lighted idea. Probably it could be a you can assemble the desks just to move inside the classroom.
Yeah, because your two plastic panels are together that you shot that doesn't have the ballistic type material that you've got sandwiched in between. Once you take that apart, it'd be interesting to know how far that round penetrated your first panel before it got into your second panel, and then where it got stopped at. Because that's going to have to tell you how thick whatever byproduct you're going to choose to downsize the weight to based on that, because if your two panels are 3/4 inch thick and you've got them side by side, so you've got an inch and a half total thickness. So if the bullet, you know, only went in 1 inch, you could shave 1/4 inch off that material to stop weight, and that still would keep it from going all the way through. So it'd be interesting to know how far it went through the first panel and how much it penetrated into your second. And you would need to take those measurements by the different caliber, so that way you can know if you needed to produce something for a customer that wasn't quite as heavy, based on the risk associated with the type of weapons they might use. You can say, we've got these three tiers for protection. Tier number one being, you know, stop a 308. Tier number four, it's geared towards small caliber weapons like a 9mm and a 45, and more of a handgun style protection.
Well, look at this, though. Here's something. Yeah. The bookcase is a great idea, but you could have another option. You know, this is your normal door. Okay, it's obviously heavy to wood. This is a fire rate door. If you look back here, it's got the sticker on the door again. So most schools are going to require this. Okay. So this is a fire rated door. Okay, but under a normal day-to-day thing, they're going to probably leave the door open. Okay, when the classroom starts, they're going to shut the door. Okay, so your bookcase would be like here.
Yes.
Okay, so the intent today is to move the bookcase over in front of the door. So would it be this tall, how tall would it actually cover the whole door? Something to think about, maybe, is something, another set of hinges, which is the ballistic panel here. So you hear something going on, you just shut the cover on the door and it gets bulletproof. And then not only do you have the door, you've got your panel behind it. And what might be easier to move, because it's on hinges.
Yes.
Anybody can shut that.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter how heavy it is. This door here, I can't pick this door up, but I can move it.
And maybe make that thing dual purpose. Maybe make it with some small shelves or something on it, which the teacher can put knickknacks or something. So it's not obtrusive to them, but it's more
purpose. It could be decorative.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
So
I guess that's good.
It would be, you could recess it back here, have shelves on it, put the stuff on it, couldn't stick out way far, but when you shut it, it's going to up against the door. And then you could actually put a lock on that thing too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm just thinking, because you're going to be moving something with a lot of books on it.
Right.
This is actually going to probably be heavier and bulkier than the second thing behind the door.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, you got a great idea.
But I like your idea also, because the idea is to also have something that looks like it's a decoration part of the school, but also it is a shelter.
Well, you
so
can
we can put in the hallways too.
Yes. I mean, here we go. We just make the shelf not this wide, this way, and it may be not necessarily on wheels, but on hinges, and that way, okay, let's do it this way, okay, hinges go this way, on this one, okay, let's say you have the bookcase here, instead of being this way, because the depth's not going to stop the bullet, it's the back, the back is going to stop the bullet, okay, so we have the back, a small shell, hinges here, and then that way you shut the door this way, and then you shut the hinges this way. So now he can't get in because he's got two sets of hinges and two doors to get through.
Right. The challenge is going to be is the reinforcement of where the hinges are going to have to sit.
It'd have to be on
in
stud
the wall.
Or something.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some forethought would have to be put in place during new construction.
And well, it wouldn't have to be a whole lot, because there's always going to be one here.
And there's going to be one right at your jam.
Yeah, there's going to be one here.
Right.
But the ones that are going to be the most susceptible are probably going to be the ones right inside the main door. That's going to be the first ones he's going to try to get into.
Yeah.
And we were talking the other day, we're both firemen. They're going to have to do something with fire alarms, too. They're going to have to make those where you can't just pull a fire alarm and everybody gets up and goes out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to come up where you pull a fire alarm or a sprinkler or a smoke detector goes off, too. There needs to be two actions to get that alarm to go off instead of one. Because one, if somebody could just walk in and see the first pull station, pull it, and the whole building empties out. Well, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have either a pull station and a smoke detector or a heat detector. Those two things have to set the detector, the system off. It's just too easy to get the kids out of the building right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And unfortunately, if you do a pre-action where the pull station goes to the office first.
Then they have to go check it out.
Then right, you've got a carrier pigeon that you're sitting out there.
The first person's going to be the guinea pig.
The first person's going to be the guinea pig, yeah. So,
but I like, either way, the shelf or the door.
Yeah, I think you'll learn more about your design once you take those panels apart and start analyzing
yes.
how far in.
How thick do you need?
Yeah, how yes. thick you need based on the application that you want. And then I think you could tier that based on risk and create different layers of material based on the ballistic capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But you want a barrier on the inside of the door. How you do that, either it's a bookcase or another door
mm-hmm.
or a small bookcase on hinges, you know, that gets the job done.
Yeah, that can help a lot. Well, that is a good idea, something we can develop. I don't know. We can work with something without make any changes on the wall.
Yeah.
Probably we have a pause, just be part of the shelter or the bookshelf.
Basically put a heavy duty stand in place and then have a pole in which it would articulate.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Something like that, just to don't mess with the wall.
Right.
Yeah.
But we definitely want to stop the bullets from getting inside.
Yeah.
The bookcase, to cover the whole door, it's going to have to be pretty tall.
Yes, yes. Now, do you think even that the bookshelf is kind of this tall, my size probably, a little more, the guy is going to try to go over or do something?
Well, it depends on how motivated he is.
Yeah. If that specific individual that they're targeting is in that space that he or she needs to have access to, and that's that motivation, they may spend extra time.
He could throw something through the opening.
Right.
Right.
And then at that point in time, if they can't get through the door, then they're going to try the second means of egress, which are going to be the windows from the outside or a connecting room or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these kids, some of these are just spur of the moment. Where they're all mad, they're all pissed off at somebody, they go home, like you said, get their parents' gun, come to school, and it's a knee-jerk reaction. They muster the guts to pull that weapon and just go on a spree, and then most of the time when they hear sirens coming, research says they take their own life and they kill themselves. I think there's a subsection of those that are premeditated, and I think they spend lots of time planning, like the Columbines and the things like that, where he watched the patterns, watched where the kids were going to go on the fire alarm system, and just picked them off outside as they were exiting
mm-hmm.
the buildings. So
yeah.
That took some planning to do, and
yes.
you know, some of them keep journals, but for the most part, I think these kids in these shootings today, it's a domestic related, it's a relationship related, it's social media related,
yeah.
and it's, if I get my hand on a gun, I'm just going to go to school and shoot things. And unfortunately, like you said, the construction material today and the tactics that we've used to manage our kids have made it vulnerable for these kids to walk in that classroom and walk in that school.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll probably find more doors locked after the classrooms are, the people have set for the classroom, less hall passes where kids can leave the room, The ingress and egress for those facilities are going to be managed a lot more. We're seeing school security systems and so forth. So school guard glass and different things. So you're, I think you're in that trend. You just need to kind of find your niche.
Yes, yes, that's correct.
So,
but here's another thing on the building construction. What you're talking about doing, the strongest thing in the building will be the door and the bookcase. There's not going to be a wall like this wall right here won't stop a bullet. You can still get through the wall. I mean, that's just drywall and metal studs. Unless the wall is made out of brick or have lockers on either side, you know.
But again, to me,
how's the new school made?
Well, it's poured concrete walls.
Oh, it ain't going to
work. So I don't know what the interior are. They look like normal drywall, but you're right. That's just going to be, depends on whether it's metal studs
or. If the shooter knows that.
Yeah, if the shooter knows that. You know, I think based on the demographic of kids and based on the type of weapon they bring in, also. If they can't get through the door's locked, like I said, I think their mentality is to move on and find that critical
weak
area.
Targets.
Weak targets, exactly. And I think if they start running out of targets, they may just start spraying everything and everywhere.
Anybody in the hallway.
And then you're going to have collateral damage from there if it goes through the walls and different things of that nature. But again, if those kids can hunker down behind something and have a shield they can put in front of them, for example, that corner, and put something in front of them that can shield them,
mm-hmm.
Whether it comes through the walls or whatever, I think that still gives them a more of a you know, a challenge to a survival than just hunkering under a desk or, you know, like the bat. There in the kindergarten rooms in the first grade rooms at the new school, there are bathrooms inside the classrooms.
Wow.
Yeah. They actually put a single bathroom facility inside each one of those classrooms.
That way the teacher doesn't have to lose track of their kids.
Right. So.
I wish you luck on
all
that.
All right. Well, thank you.
The bookcase is a great idea. It's a cool video. There's one more caliber I'd like to see tested.
Okay.
Which one? The 50 caliber.
50 caliber?
Like a Desert Eagle.
So. I think you would have probably it would have moved the bookcase. I don't know.
Well, I think so. They use a 50 caliber on the 500 Magnum, not.
Well, that's a pistol. Yeah, that's got a short shell.
Okay.
The 50 caliber shell is probably about like that. So.
Well, yeah.
It's
yes.
gonna. Well, yeah, you're right though. The pistol. Was that a short shell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Did that go through?
No. No, we were.
Yeah, but your 50 car, you're talking about a vehicle mounted or a tripod mounted weapon.
Well, they're testing guns.
Yeah.
That's a gun. I got a shell on my shelf back here.
No, that pistol did anything to that. We were so amazed. I mean, boom, 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 and we went the back. We are expecting a big hole. Nothing. Don't even go through. No damage in the back.
I would say the 223, the 556, the. 380s, 45s, 40 calibers,
9 millimeter.
Everybody's got 9 millimeters. Those are the ones you're going to see. So if you could stop those, you'd be in pretty good shape. Anything outside that, it's going to be unusual.
So you said this is recycled plastics.
Yes, sir.
But is there anything special you're doing when you compound that plastic when you put it back together?
No,
really?
No. Yes. It's just recycled plastic. What we use, we have another kind of plastic that we use. Add a fiberglass. That's it. But other than that, it's just recycled plastic.
It's absorbing the kinetic energy.
Yeah, because of the density of the material. That's why it'd be interesting to see how thick your panels are, how far it went through the first before it got into the second, and how far it went through the second panel.
It's two inches thick.
So each of your panels are two inches thick. Mm-hmm. So you got 4 inches of plastic altogether.
Yes.
And then you've got a quarter inch material
of the panel.
Okay. Yes. So that brings in your weight. Mm-hmm. So again, did it even go through your first 2 inches?
That's what we need to check.
Right.
Once we
and
open
it. And if it did, then it go a quarter of an inch into the second panel.
Mm-hmm.
So then you could make a panel that would be 3.5 inches versus 4 or 3.25 or whatever it may be, mm-hmm. which would help reduce your weight.
Yes. Plus, even if it does make it all the way through that, it's going to be going a lot slower.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's not going to really do a whole lot of damage with the velocity.
And it'd also be interesting to look how deformed that round looks, too.
Oh, basically. It's going to be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you try any hollow point rounds?
it's probably just going to splatter when it hits.
Just going to mushroom out.
Yeah, it's not going to go very far.
Fragment.
Yeah. The piercing tips is what you needed to really test it.
Okay.
Because that's going to be the harder, the bullet's going to stay together longer. The hollow points will just splatter when they hit.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what they're designed to do. But the NATO rounds, I'm pretty sure that's what they were using on that one, the armor piercing type. There's another round too that probably the cops can get you. It's the ones
Black
that
talons.
Yeah, it goes through the bulletproof vest.
One goes through engine blocks. That's how they used to shut cars. The federal government would shut cars down as they'd shoot the engine blocks and bore holes in them and they'd stop. You know, they'd start leaking and they'd stop running. So,
okay.
But
it'd be easy to find. You just follow the trail.
Yeah.
That's pretty. It was pretty cool.
Okay, thank you.
So,
and if any idea came to you, please let us know.
Okay.
Well, you can use anything we've said here today. Just keep us in mind when you get rich.
I will talk with Brent about that, It will be good.
Well, good luck with your product. Well,
thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. Thank you, sir.
Brent said he was going out of town for the weekend. So.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you.
Okay,
yes, sir. Thank you.
Hi, Mr.
Thank you, man.
We're recording. What are you doing?
You ready? We're gonna count to three and then you start. One, two, three.
Hello today. My name's Brent Grafton. My wife and I own Green Tree Plastics. Frequently children ask us, how do we make their caps and the benches? One of the things that we do first, and that's why it's so important that you follow the list that we've given you on what is acceptable and what is not. It's very important that we not have metal in the, among the caps. It's important that we not have too much paper among the caps. And it's also important what kind of caps and lids that you bring to us. This is what we're going to do with your caps. They come to us like this, and then we send them through a very big machine and we grind them up down to this consistency. Now this plastic is an insulator. If we were to take this material and put it on a pot on the stove and put a fire underneath it, the only thing that melts is what's actually touching the metal. So we cannot melt plastic like you would heat up soup, because the heat doesn't actually transfer all the way through the plastic. It just stays with what is being heated. So this is the device that we use to melt your plastic. This is a extruder screw. It comes inside of a very big steel barrel. This is a small one. We use bigger ones. And what we do is that we have a cone that feeds this material down into the screw right here. So it's inside of a big barrel. This is turning. And if you look here closely, you can see that each time we go to a new flight, this center shaft gets bigger. So by the time we get down here, this is about 20% of the volume that's starting here. So what we're doing, the way we're melting the plastic, is that we're using friction, like this. You rub your hands together like this long enough, you feel it start to heat up. Well, that's what's happening when we're giving the plastic a smaller and smaller and smaller space, is that we're forcing the molecules to try and occupy the same space. They don't like it, they get mad, they get hot, they move, they melt. So by the time we get here, the plastic's actually melted. Now, when we take this mix of plastic and run it through this system, it comes out gray. This is what it looks like when it comes out on the ground. And as you can see, that gray has a little bit of a tint to it. Well, when you bring us your caps, if you have a lot of blue caps, you come up with the gray that kind of has a blue tint to it. If you have a lot more orange caps, you come up with a gray that has kind of an orange hue to it. So all of the colors that we have are coming out of that mix, and later I'll have a talk that will tell you how we add pigments to make those colors, but all those colors we start with some form of gray. Then once the material comes out of this machine, it goes into a mold. The mold then is it's a cavity mold. That mold is filled up with the plastic under pressure, and then we allow that material to cool, and just as you can see, it sets in a shape. Whatever shape that we have the inside of the mold is what the product ends up. And as you can see on the back wall here, we have a lot of different molds that we have experimented with so that there is a great diversity possible of what kinds of products that we can make.
That's
it.
Okay,
that's good.
We'll move from there.
I like that.
And there's that fly.
Oh, you got it.
It was in my head.
You got it.
Okay, now
you. Hello today. My name is Brent Grafton. My wife Bonnie and I own Green Tree Plastics. And today I want to answer the question that many children have had is, where do our colors come from? We have, when we take your plastic caps and we grind them up, as we have down in here, and put those through our extruder, they come out a basic gray. Now what we have found is that we have a company that's not too far from us here in Evansville that makes color concentrates for the plastic industry. And when they're making their color concentrates, they have a waste stream where when they're changing from one color to the next, or when they're first starting up, they let the material that's coming out of their extruders fall out on the floor. We call those purges. We actually go down and pick those purges up, and we sort them out by color. This right here is a very small example, but you can see in it where they started with a clear plastic, and they're trying to embed upwards of 40% of a very fine powder that they call pigment that carries the color. Now what they're trying to achieve is they create little tiny pellets then that are used by other plastic processors to color all of the plastic items that you see. So when you go to the store and you buy something that's orange, they've taken raw plastic and added this color to it. And so what we do is we take those purges, we shred them, and we grind them up very fine, just like this little tray here, and then we add these to your caps, and then we add them to your caps in the color that the purge was, makes your colors that you have for your benches. Now, since all of our colors start with gray, these are not going to be the real bright colors that you might find when you're buying something in the store. They're going to be a little different shade of that. And then it makes a difference on how many orange or how many blue caps are in your material as to how bright the colors are that you've ordered from us. Now, one of the things that we've learned about color is that this is going to be some science, that the reason we see colors is because the pigments either absorb or reflect colors in a light spectrum. The light spectrum is of just waves that go like this. The smaller, closer together waves are the blue. The larger, farther away waves are the red, and then the yellows in between. So when we have this pigment in our plastic, what you are seeing is a molecule, like this is what a yellow molecule looks like, and that molecule, because of its physical structure, reflects the yellow out of the light spectrum and absorbs the other colors. So when you're making a decision on what color your bench is going to be for your schoolyard, what we've discovered is that when you pick blue is a very intense short wave, which means it has a lot of energy. And when it hits this pigment molecule, the blue light will actually break the electrical bonds
between the molecules, it changes the shape of that pigment, and then that makes the product looks like the colors are fading. So since blue is reflecting, the reason we see blue is because it's reflecting the highest energy wave in the spectrum, whereas red is reflecting the lowest energy wave and absorbing the highest. So as it turns out, almost all reds fade. And what we've now learned, that the best way to keep your colors from fading is to use mineral or oxide metal-based colors. And so if you have blue, we now, give me a second. Okay, so on this color spectrum, as you know, if we mix blue with yellow, we come up with green. If we mix yellow with red, we come up with orange. And the and what the color guys that we get these colors from have told us is that the best way to have a color that will stand up to the sun is to use either a mineral base or a metal oxide base pigment. That means that the molecules that are constructed, that are reflecting or absorbing the light, have bonds that are very, very old, in some cases millions of years. Whereas if we use synthetic pigments, which go into a lot of our products, those synthetic pigments have bonds that are very new. So those bonds are easy to break apart, which is why synthetic pigments fade very quickly. So when what the color concentrate fellow has taught us is that blue is very, very difficult to synthesize, so all blue pigments in the environment are mineral-based. So the blue will stand up the best to sunlight, along with black and white, and of course gray. Then the farther up the spectrum you go, the more likely you're gonna get fading. We actually do add oxide reds and oxide yellows to help your products to keep them from fading very quickly. But if you have a blue product that takes the direct sun very well, if you have a red product, it's best to put those either inside or in shade so that the sun's not beating on. Is that good? Or do I need to say more?
No, it's good.
Let's do it again. The square, this one, explain a little bit more.
A little better? Okay.
Yeah, just the same. It's just for backup.
Okay.
But we need to move the line because your face looks less. Yeah, it looks better.
Okay.
Directo. Nada más con que se vea su rostro más iluminado. No, what is this?
So you want this angle maybe?
So I'm just going to do the light spec, explain the waves and that part of it.
Okay. And the molecules.
Okay.
Okay. Ready. 1, 2, 3.
So the visible light in that surrounds us is white light, and that light contains all the colors of the rainbow. And the reason that we see colors is because the pigments that are in our items either reflect or absorb the different colors in the white light. So if I'm looking at something and it's blue, it's because that particular pigment molecule is reflecting the blue and absorbing all the rest of the waves that are in the light the visible light spectrum. And what the spectrum is just a wave. The smaller waves are on this end, and as they get bigger, they get farther apart. And then on this end, we see the red. And that means that when I see something that's red, the pigment is reflecting red and absorbing the rest of the different waves in the spectrum. And where that causes an issue is, as you can see here, this is a yellow pigment molecule. It's actually the physical structure of the molecule that has it absorbing or reflecting the actual color out of this spectrum. And so when that physical structure is completely intact, I see yellow. But when the electrical bonds on that structure get broken, it changes the shape of the pigment molecule, which means it, to our eye, it starts to fade and becomes a different color. So what we have learned is that the best way to keep a pigment from fading or a color from fading is to use colors or pigments that are from mineral or from metals, metal oxides. In that case, the actual structure of the pigment molecule has very, very old bonds, so that it's very difficult to break them. The colors that are made synthetically have very new bonds. In some cases, they're only months old, whereas the mineral bonds, sometimes those bonds are millions of years old. So they're much more hardy, much easier to. So what we have learned, though, is that blue cannot be synthesized economically. So all blue pigments are derived from mineral. So when you have a blue bench board, that blue has very old bonds, and it's going to stand up to the sun the best. Number one, because it's a mineral, and number two, because it's actually reflecting the highest energy wave in the light spectrum and absorbing the lowest energy wave. Whereas if you go out to red, now we do add red oxides to help support the colors, but when you go out to red, the red is reflecting the lowest energy wave and it's absorbing the highest energy wave, so that the red pigment molecule has been beating up as the blue and the ultraviolet is beating the pieces out of it. So red is very difficult to keep from fading. If you have a red bench, it's best to keep it either in the shade or inside. If you want to have a bench out in the wide open, having it blue, green, or gray, and then your colors will stay fast for a long time. Okay?
Good. I like more this speech than the first one.
Okay, because?
Because I think so you sound more, you're talking with more confidence, and the speech is like have more better structure. For me, that I don't understand science,
yes.
You know, so mm-hmm. for me it was a little more clear this one mm-hmm. to understand.
Okay.
So just keep in mind that one, probably we can edit in the edition, or we can use this speech in the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. We just need to find where he starts to talking about the color, you know, to make that transition. Okay.
Is that where you want that thing?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want it?
I'm ready. Hello, my name is Brent Grafton. My wife and I own Green Tree Plastics. And today, I would like to answer the question is why we make our products out of caps. Many years ago, when we first started our business, we had a phone call from a local company that asked us to help them with a problem they were having. They were purging their material out of their big machines into cardboard boxes. They were putting those boxes in the dumpster, and about once a week they'd have a dumpster fire. So we went over and we worked out a project with them where we would put boxes inside their plant, and they would put all their purges in those boxes, and then we'd bring them here, and we then would make product from that plastic. Well, that company, as it turns out, makes most of the caps that you are bringing back to us. So there's almost a closed loop recycling, is that you're bringing caps back to where they were, many of them were originally made. And so that is how we learned how to make products out of bottle caps. Now, several of the things that we learned from them, one is that the caps are manufactured under an FDA requirement, which means they're manufactured for food contact. That means that when the cap's done, it's going to go on something, a bottle or something that you're going to drink out of. And because of that, well, we learned from taking that scrap, I kept getting really, really pretty parts, caps, in the boxes with the purchase, and I finally went back and asked one of the managers why these perfect parts. Well, he said, under FDA requirements, if the cap falls on the ground, if a human being touches it, it's trash. Because they cannot take a chance of having somebody's skin off their oil off their skin, contaminating the cap and then going to a customer. So from that we learned that the caps have to be made from pure virgin resin. So when they make that material, so that there is nothing in the cap that can hurt a human. So the caps themselves are all made from material that comes straight from the refiner. It's only been through the extrusion process once, maybe twice. And then it can have nothing in it that can hurt a human. In addition, the polymers that are used for food contact are high-density polyethylene, low-density polyethylene, and polypropylene. And the primary reason that those polymers are used is because they're what we call hydrophobic. They will not allow any moisture into the molecular content, into the molecules of the plastic. Whereas something like ABS or polycarbonate, the items that you have in your home, like your computer terminal, those will hold something like 2% moisture. And the problem with having the ability to take moisture into plastic is that the moisture stays there, it will support pathogen growth, and whatever happens to be in the moisture can now be in the plastic. So for food contact, the high-density polyethylene, the polypropylene, and the low-density polyethylene are used because they will not let moisture into their molecular structure. So we have, when your children are handling caps, you can be assured that there is nothing in that cap that can hurt your child. And if you wash the cap, it's clean. There's nothing being held within the molecular structure of the plastic that can be harmful to your child. Furthermore, what we've learned is that when you say polymer, what you're saying is many mers, poly is many, mer is molecule. So you're actually talking about a hydrocarbon chain that is made up of many molecules. And so when that is what gives plastic its strength, when it melts, when we run it through our extrusion process and melt the plastic, all the polymer chains kind of float around like they elongate and they float around in a matrix. And so they're all floating around in these little chains, and then when they coalesce or when they crystallize, when they set up, they all interlock back in together. And the way in which those polymer chains interlock is what gives the plastic its strength. Now, when I explained before how we melt our plastics, we do it with friction. And if you think about, if I'm doing this to polymer chains, I'm breaking up the polymer chains. So each time the plastic goes through this extrusion process, it shortens the chains up, so it makes it less strong. So one of the values of the plastic that is in your caps is that it's only been through this process no more than twice, which means they have very long polymer chains, which give them an opportunity to lock together when they cure, when they crystallize, and that's what makes your bench so strong, is going to make it last for so long. In addition, the kinds of plastics that are in the caps that you're bringing us is one is polypropylene. Now, polypropylene is a really nice polymer. I gotta wait till that's over.
We are not using this, right?
Right. Is that in the picture?
Yeah.
So going back.
Yeah,
1, 2, 3.
So when the polypropylene hydrocarbon chain is melted, it's all stretched out. But then when it crystallizes, it's like a branch chain. It actually interlocks in with the plastic, which makes polypropylene a stronger plastic to use. Then the low-density polyethylenes and the high-density polyethylenes, when those hydrocarbon chains crystallize, they actually fold down in on top of each other like accordions. And so the low-density polyethylene chain mixes really well with the polypropylene. It also mixes really well with the high-density polyethylene, and that's part of what makes the product that you have from us as strong as it is. That sounds like it. How annoying. Third grade. Now some of this will be above, but okay. Go back to this.
Hold on from the.
So yes. I was at the low density, the high density.
Yeah.
Okay. Say when.
3, 2, 1.
So the high density polyethylene and the low density polyethylene. When those polymer chains are in a solid state, they are actually fold down in on top of each other. As you can see, the low density, there's a lot more room in here, whereas the high density is a little tighter, so that the low density interlocks with the high density, and then the polypropylene will interlock with both of them. And that's why the product that you have from us is so strong. Now, what we've discovered, and the reason that when you are following along with the acceptable caps list, is that, so we have low-density polyethylene, we have polypropylene, and then we have high-density polyethylene. And when you bring us your caps, there's the mix of these different items are very close to what's necessary to make a good product. When and furthermore, when these products are being made, as you can think, when something melts, it is really fluid or it's not fluid. It can be like water or it can be like peanut butter. And so the plastics that we use, the plastics that are used to make caps, all have about real close to the same melt flow, which means when they're melted, they flow at about the same rate, so that when we're putting them through our extrusion process, they mix together very well. And then when they come and go into your product and they crystallize in such a way, when I say crystallize, I mean when it's cured, when it becomes a hard again, it all interlocks together and then we have a very strong part. That's it.
Okay, let's do it the same with the
caps.
You pick that one.
Hold on. This is really good explanation. So, but we have low density
number 4.
Numbers. That. And remember, here is Mark, has a little 4. High is number 2. You can say that the numbers are printing in those caps. That it will be good.
Actually, they're not printed in those.
Okay, we have this.
It's printed on number 4, but number 2 and number.
Julio says right. He's learning a lot.
He's what? Learning. He's learning a lot?
Yeah, okay. I never pay attention in that number. Never.
So we'll go back and...
Yes, just the part.
Yeah, just about the number 4.
Well, but also...
The number 2 and the number 5.
You mentioned something. That's why the products you have from us is very strong.
Right.
That is good.
Say when.
Sell point. Yes.
We're still recording, so...
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
So when you look at your item and it says number 4 on it, and this one happens, she says LDPE, that's the low density polyethylene. A lot of the smaller caps do not have numbers on them, but we know by testing that this cap is a high density polyethylene cap. So you have low density polyethylene, high density polyethylene, And this one also does not have a number on it, but it is going to be a number 5, which is polypropylene, and we know that because we know the guys that make these, and that's what they use to make the polymer. So you have high-density polyethylene number 2, low-density polyethylene number 4, and polypropylene number 5. And those are the components that we use to make your bench and to make your boards very, very strong to last a very long time. So we're starting with nearly virgin resin, as close to virgin as the recycle market gets, and then we're mixing them together in such a way that their polymer chains, long polymer chains, interlock, and that's why your bench is going to last for many, many years. Thank you.
That's great. That's great.
You want this?
Yes.
Here's one before I get without talking, just the way that
your hands and brain.
Say when.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
We really appreciate you watching this video. We here at Green Tree Plastics have worked very hard to figure out how to make really nice products for your schoolyards, your backyard, your churchyard, and we would appreciate if you would like this video and share this video with your friends, and you have a good day. Thank you.
Nice.
That work?
Yeah. Let's make a mess.
Drying back in here too, because that's what.
Drying.
Yeah, I will. This is one that slips through off.
You might even say something like, "If you can believe it."
Yeah.
That's why. No, this is why the sorting is so important.
Yes.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, action.
My name is Brent Grafton. My wife Bonnie and I own Green Tree Plastics, and we would like to thank all of the children for their hard work in collecting of caps and bringing them to us so that we can make really nice benches for their schoolyards, for their church. But there is something that we need to say. It is very important that you follow the acceptable caps list. It's very important that the children sort through the caps and pull out all of the metal, all too much paper, and any trash that might be in the caps. Just for an example, so your caps are coming to us like this. We put them in a very big machine and grind them up, and that machine does not like metal. And these are actually items that have come out of cap collection. As you can see, there's a certain what looks like plastic cap that has a metal liner in it. Other things have just kind of been in there by accident. As you can see, that did a lot of damage to our machine. This item here actually has a spring in it that, as you're pumping, that's what makes that work. So that spring damages our machines. This item here, you can actually see the spring in that. So these are all items that are not acceptable. Somebody's barbell, we've had cell phones, all kinds of things. So the children have to be very careful to not let any of this material come to us inside their caps. And if they would do that, we would greatly appreciate it. It makes our job much easier. It keeps our employees safer, and it gives the kids a much better sense of what it means to recover the resources that we are wasting too much of. So we thank you for watching this video. Please share and like. Thank you.
Nice.
Did that sound too?
Yeah, that's gonna be important for the.
Yeah.
Even the teachers are going to share that with other teachers.
Julio, si tuviéramos una...
Me hace que mejor lo grabamos allá, ¿no? Porque ya tenemos mucho de este lado. Son tres videos de acá, muchos fondos.
¿Sigues trayendo memoria?
Sí.
Suficiente. Sí. Me gustaría una aquí porque esta no está dentro.
¿Lo respaldo?
Sí, al cabo podemos tomar aquella. O puedes tomar fotos aquella y esta. Lo que me gustaría es tal vez una tele después ahí y que esos videos estén para verlo constantemente porque vienen muchos clientes. Muchos clientes. Y que tenga su logo de YouTube y nos puedan, sí, se lo lleven en la cabeza. No lo llevan aquí, se lo llevan a su casa. Eso sería como un buen trabajo. Ya. Ya, ellos están viendo aquí o allá. O quien llega, ¿verdad? Sí. Nomás páralo. Para en aquel rincón. ¿Está
pesado?
Esta base como tiene un... ¿Cómo esa base tiene diseño?
Sí, los hacen así.
O sea, no, pero ese fue un invento que hizo. Él le aventó, antes de tirar, llenar el molde, aventó una cosa de plástico. Sí. Ahorita me gustaría que le tomaras una foto a este, así que salga el contraste de lo naranja con lo verde, la luz.
No, con el flash.
Ese puede ser muy buena portada.
No, no, directo blanco. Pero como sea, le damos más color a un poquito.
No, no traes eso cuando tomas objetos que le puedes cambiar ahí como se llama.
Hola. ¿Cómo es? 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 ¿Cóm
ojos. Está bien, no importa el color que se vea. Si le tomas así, que no salga tu sombra de acá sin flash. Así va a salir la sombra. Toma un celular. Debes de traer una donde sale la luz amarilla que falta más.
Lo que decía, ¿no? Quitarle, que te diera más calidad a la luz.
Sí, no salió flash, sí.
Sí, flash, pero ya la luz la cambió a cálida.
Cámbiale aquí a mujer o retrato.
¿Retrato?
O la flor. Chécate ahí. Hay una que trae como retrato y esa es buena. Oh, está botando flash, es lo mismo.
Bueno, hay mucha luz ya por eso.
No, pero hay una que sí te lo agarra, es un flash. Es un poco la sombra, pero se ve más parejo y no se ve con la luz blanca, ¿sí? Pero ya vamos a hacer algo.
Don't put that in there.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Hello, my name is Brent Grafton. My wife, Bonnie, and I own Green Tree Plastics. And today I wanted to talk about the different ways that plastic lumber is manufactured in this country. We use a method that is about 25 or 30 years old. It's called flow mold. And in our process, when we inject the plastic into a mold, we actually start on one end, and the mold is very long, and then we shoot the material into the one end of the board, and the material flows all the way through to the other end of the board. And one of the things that makes our product very strong is as that material is flowing, it runs through the inside of the board as it goes to the other end. And as it's doing that, it actually gives structure to the board because it puts multiple layers, parallel layers of plastic, and in the case of our bench boards that have a little bit of fiberglass support in them, so it's putting multiple layers of a fiberglass reinforced plastic, which is what makes our boards very stiff, It makes them so that they will not sag over time, and it allows us to produce a product that doesn't have a metal support underneath like a lot of our competitors. It also allows us to produce a product that we can count on being as straight 5, 10, 15 years from now as it is when you put it into your product, into your space. Now, the other method for manufacturing plastic lumber is what they call, what is called profile extrusion. And in the profile extrusion process, as you can see, this is an example. The you can see the flow marks, and what happens is as the extruder is pushing the material out, it just pushes it, and the molecular bonds. All right. Okay. So the extruder, they push the material through a die that gives it its shape, and then it pushes the material up against the next layer, the next layer, the next layer, the next layer. And as you can see, if you look very closely at the end, you have a very fine distribution of really tiny little cavities and a very thin skin. And that's a consequence of just the extruder pushing, pushing, pushing. That's called profile extrusion, and that's actually a much older technology, and that's used in many, many different industries for making profiles for all kinds of different products. Our flow mold process, on the other hand, so as you could have seen, these small little cavities actually creates a box beam, and that interior cavitation is the last plastic that went in, and so the outer walls actually set up, and then what that cavitation is from when the inside plastic actually cures, it shrinks a little, and that's what opens up those little cavities in there. And so the strength of our product is in what you see as a box beam, because that box beam goes the full length of the product all the way through to the other end here, and again you see the little cavitation. So the molded boards tend to be much stiffer, they tend to work not sag, and they last for much longer. Whereas with the extruded boards, that's why you often will see metal supports underneath picnic tables, is to keep those extruded boards from sagging, because there's just not enough structure inside the part to be able to support its own weight. So I hope that helps to explain a little bit the difference between molded, which we call the flow mold method, and extruded, which is also used in this industry, and it's for profile extrusion. Thank you.
Can you write down the names of the
food? I know that.
That's just, that can just be short.
Yeah, just a short video here, him showing this face. What are all the items I need when I make the trip to Green Tree?
The very first item you're going to need is a proper vehicle, truck and or truck or trailer. Please refer to the dimensions on the ABC products and price sheet. There you'll find the dimensions of all of our ABC items, length, width, height, and total weight. All of our items come fully assembled at the time of pickup.
Okay. What will happen when I get to Green Tree now? Cut. What will happen when I arrive?
The first thing is you'll pull into the parking lot and you'll walk through the glass doors and into the ABC office. There, we will complete paperwork. I will receive your driver's confirmation invoice, tax exempt form, and your payment. I'll prepare your paid invoice for you. And then we'll have you go back to your vehicle and you'll pull through our drive where you'll meet our team members who will unload your caps, load up your ordered ABC items, weigh all the caps that you've delivered for the children, and write your total weight for delivery on your paid invoice and give that back to you. At that time, you'll be free to go back home to present the children with their benches and tables.
Sounds great. How long does an appointment usually take?
Appointments usually take in between a half hour to an hour, of course, depending on the size of your order and the cap weight that you're bringing. If you have a numerous bench or table order, it may take a little bit longer, but my team tries to get you out as quick as possible.
Great. How should the caps be delivered?
We prefer that the children's caps, once they're sorted in acceptable condition, all be poured into 55-gallon lawn and leaf bags or contractor bags. We have found that those bags are a little bit thicker than your normal trash bag, so they hold up for the ride a little bit better.
Thank you. I got the last question. The proper vehicle that you said?
Oh, we talked. Oh, yeah.